This is episode 369. Have you heard about the latest intermittent fasting research? The American Heart Association recently put out a very large study that stated that you have a much higher chance of death if you do regular intermittent fasting, which is pretty scary because I too do a lot of intermittent fasting, so this really caught my attention. And so what we do in this episode is we talk about that research and why it's bullshit. We also talk pretty directly about you taking responsibility for your weight loss journey and why diet trends happen and how to avoid getting sucked into them. I want you to get your tinfoil hat out for this one, and you might also need a teaspoon of cement as well, which will make sense in about 20 or 30 minutes. All right, if you're up for some myth-busting, research-busting ridiculousness, then when you're ready, let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? It's you, it's me, it's Tomo hanging out here on this episode. Now, in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. And so Tomo is here in the studio with me today. He is an amigo from episode 331, and he's back in town. So go and check out episode 331 when you're finished here. Now, Tomo Marjanovic, this man is the CEO of Aspire Rejuvenation Medical Center and an expert and advocate for hormonal health and optimization. Tomo was formerly a police officer that was awarded the Public Safety Medal of Valor for his exceptional bravery and sacrifice to ensure the safety of others. And he's appeared in loads of well-known publications, the Daily Mail, Yahoo News, the New York Post, and loads more. And our previous episode was on men's health, masculinity, hormones, testosterone. So go and check that out, obviously, once you're finished here. But Tomo, mate, how you doing?
Excellent. We're going to talk some very interesting topics today, I think, Maddie. I think we got some diet stuff on the menu, pun intended. There's so much about food we can talk about. And I loved our last conversation about hormones. I think that is such a crucial thing. But I think even the precursor to your hormones needing to be adjusted is what you are consuming every single day, not just from food, not just from water, also content. People need to be watching things like this, educating themselves. You know, getting off the TikTok scrolling brain numbing nonsense. Do not do that all day to yourself. So what we consume is monumentally important. And I'm so happy we can have this conversation.
Totally. I found, and probably you have too, that people have just consumed so much knowledge, like you're talking about, whether it be TikTok, Pinterest, Instagram, or they've been on the cycle for many years of trying different diets, that they're now often at a point where there's so much information in their head and they've experimented so much, they're now really confused as to what's right for them, what information is true, what is not true, because they're still in the same situation with their body or their health. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the people I talk to and work with are sort of at a position where they're like, I've done so much and now I've got no idea.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's information everywhere, right? And we're inundated with all these different diet ideas and diet practices and what's a good food, what's not a good food. It's really simple. There's really simple things that you can just look at from a food standpoint. If you go into any grocery store or anything like that, if you see I know in Australia it's different, and here in the United States it's very different. I would say the United States has the worst food on the planet, the absolute worst. UK is right behind us because they're very westernized.
We're not far behind.
Yeah, EU is catching up, Australia is catching up, but I mean, like, I'll tell you what, you go into some places that other people would consider second or third world, they have the best food because it's not processed. It's actually straight from a farm or an animal, you know. And you go into, there's two grocery stores over here. I'm sure you've heard of Whole Foods, right?
Yeah, we've got it here too.
Perfect. So Whole Foods used to be a great grocery store. You heard what I said, used to be. Guess who bought them? What was it, 5 years ago?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Who purchased Whole Foods?
Amazon.
Oh, of course they did.
Of course they did. So Amazon purchases Whole Foods, everything starts to go to shit. Sorry for my French. So everything starts to go and it just starts to spiral down, and you can go and you can test this theory yourself. Go and look at their bread. They used to have some of the best bread out there. They had the best bakeries where you went and got sourdough bread. It was the dough. It was water, yeast, salt, maybe some different spices. That was it. It was real bread. You go and look at the bread now in Whole Foods, the ingredient list is this big. And for anybody that's listening and not watching, it's as big as my head. There are probably 40 different ingredients, and you can even pull this up and research this yourself. You know, so when people talk about food, what we consume, you know, what diet is right for them, obviously it's very individual. I know vegans that I will never be a vegan. Guess what? I tried vegan diet for 2 weeks. I made it 2 weeks before I started to get so sick that I could not handle it. I know guys that are vegans that thrive. I know guys that are carnivore that thrive. I know people that are pescatarian, vegetarian, every type of diet you can think of, and they thrive. But it doesn't mean it's right for you. So it's about experimentation. It's about, in my personal opinion, the best diet for every single person on the planet, unless you have to eliminate foods, is going to be simple, balanced diet. Staying away from highly processed foods, staying away from seed oils. Yes, I know, seed oils, big topic of conversation. Everybody's like, oh, if he's talking about seed oils, he's an idiot. You know, these things are real problems. They're real problems. They actually cause real inflammation. There is a plethora of medical data behind how bad some of these things are. We were just talking about this before we press record today. And there's now studies coming out that are FDA backed, whatever, that are saying, oh no, seed oils are actually good for you. They're actually healthy for you. They're healthy for your heart. They're not. They're not. They're lying. The question now you need to ask yourself is, why are they lying?
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. I did an episode, what feels like years ago now, literally called The Shocking History of Vegetable Oils on episode 136, where I talk about, yeah, just where it started in the whaling industry and all of the money that came into the Heart Association from the vegetable oil companies. And yeah, so it's a bit of a rabbit hole. But one of the things that the links or the conversation points that we were touched on before we hit record was this recent article that's come out, which has kind of shocked the intermittent fasting world. And it's a study that's funded by or put out by the American Heart Association. And it's the idea that there's that 8-hour time restricted eating has been linked to a 91% higher risk of cardiovascular death. So doing 16:8 in the intermittent fasting supposedly has been linked to 91% increased risk of cardiovascular disease. And just to give more context for everybody listening, there was 20,000 people in this study. So that makes it sound like this was a very legit study. So I'm going to leave that there. Tomo, what do you make of that?
So I will tell you right now that I personally do not trust the American Heart Association at all. Because if you look at some of their historical studies, you look at some of their funded studies that they have signed off on, they factually are the complete opposite of what they're stating. So, you know, people are like, oh, well, how can you go against the American Heart? They are the people for heart health. They're not. Half their shit is funded by, you know, by Big Pharma. Half their stuff's funded by Big Food. And again, what did you just say before that? American Heart Association got a bunch of money from the vegetable oil and seed oil industries. You know, it's a business, guys. It's a business. Food is a business. So is medicine. And the people that go against that narrative, they're going to get targeted, and they're going to try to, you know, so what is becoming very, very popular? It's very, very popular right now to do some intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. There are mountains of data, and a lot of it anecdotal, unfortunately, mountains of data saying that intermittent fasting is extremely good for some people. Again, this is not a catch-all. There is no diet catch-all for everyone. Can intermittent fasting be good for you? Maybe. Try it. See what your blood work does. Test it with actual data. So, okay, let's see, where are you sitting at? Well, I have high blood pressure. I'm having gut health problems. I have XXXX, right? You verified all this from your primary care doctor. You have blood work showing this. Well, there's some anecdotal evidence that intermittent fasting can fix this, this, this. Let's not even go into the American Heart Association data, right? Let's just talk about what everybody was referring to intermittent fasting for. All right, you test it out. It corrects your cholesterol. Oh, that's cool. It corrects your blood pressure. Cool. You also lost some body fat. Very cool. And all these things start happening. What happened bad? What happened that was negative? Probably nothing.
Yeah.
You know? Now, is there some data that the American Heart Association is pulling that may show there might be some negative side effects to intermittent fasting? I'm sure there is. It's not everything is for everyone. There's people that will fast for 72 hours. I make it to about 50, and I do it about every quarter. I'll do a 50-hour water and bone broth fast. I'll do bone broth after 24 hours just because I'm starving and I'm a large guy. I'm 6'3", 230 pounds, fairly muscled. So, I need some protein in my life. So after about 24 hours, I start hurting. So a little bit of protein is good after that. But there's some people that say, oh, doing a fast that long is just so bad for you. And then there's other data that says it's so good for you. It's all relative.
I'm in the middle of a 72-hour fast, coincidentally, right now.
Right now?
Yeah.
You look great. You look great. You look bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. It's 7 a.m. where you are. So, how far are you into it?
About 30 hours, yeah.
So you're in the zone right now. You're actually in the great spot right now.
Yeah. Brain functioning well, feeling wired. Yeah.
And for people that have never done this or don't do this, people are like, oh, well, how do you feel after the first day? I was like, honestly, it's leading into the first day that's the hardest. Mm-hmm. When you get to that 24-hour or 30-hour mark, you start to really feel good. Mental clarity is at a high, energy is at a high. You feel empty. Your aches and pains, your inflammation starts to go down. I've experienced it. I've done it.
Yeah.
I personally don't see much benefit for me after about 50 or so hours. Mm-hmm. I start to feel pretty crappy. There is some benefits. They're saying, what is it? Anti-aging. What's the fifth stage of fasting that you get?
The autophagy.
There we go. So the autophagy, getting into that last stage of it, is that something that's beneficial? Sure. Is it something that I wanted to suffer through? No. I was good at 50. I'm not happy.
Well, interestingly, and I broke my fast. You probably know this, but lifting heavy weights regularly, which is you do, also stimulates autophagy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, there again, and some people are very, very against this long fasting window that you're doing right now mm-hmm. and you're feeling great, that I've done several times feeling great, but you have these giant conglomerates mm-hmm. that are governmentally funded. And you also have a lot of funding going into these organizations that are coming from very profit driven industries. Mm-hmm. Big food and big pharma are only profit driven. Let me just make that clear to everybody. They do not give a shit about your health whatsoever. They want to make as much money as possible. And when they have their quarterly meetings or monthly meetings, they aren't talking about how many healthy people they got. We cured this many disease, or we helped this many people eat better. No, all they care about is, hey, our profits only went up 4%. They needed to go up 6%. Cut something, do something better, sell more. Fund this study. It's going to tell everybody that seed oils is good for you, that fasting is bad for you.
Duh.
Just throwing it out there. I'm not tinfoil hatting you guys yet, but you got to look at everything.
Trust me, anybody that's still with us on whatever number episode this will be at 300 and almost 400, they basically produce tinfoil hats with me.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I have one over here right on the shelf. If you need me to grab it at any time, I can.
But the thing that shocked me with this particular study, this intermittent fasting study, and I actually had a few naturopath friends message me and say, oh my God, have you seen this announcement mm-hmm. that's come out? And once I started looking into it, it was 2 days. So the study that was done, 20,000 people, everybody was a minimum of 20 years old.
Yep.
But the data that they collected was of 2 days, two 24-hour periods of a dietary recall questionnaire. 2 days. Like how? And then they connected that to people that are in the medical system in the US who predictably go on to, have cardiovascular disease and be obese. Mm-hmm. But it was 2 days. Like 2 days.
Yeah, that's not a proper study whatsoever.
There's, not even remotely.
There's not even there, and that's the thing. That's the thing that people need to understand. Mm-hmm. When it comes to a lot of medical studies, a lot of these are not even properly manufactured studies. We know how hypothesis in a study scientifically should work. Anybody that understands it, if you look it up, just Google it. Just go on Google and how should a medical study be structured? Okay, here is how it should be structured. Now go look at these studies. How can they possibly correlate the proper data with this minimal effect, with this minimal base of patients or people, and with a self-reporting?
Yeah.
They had no blood work. They had no, it's a self-reporting study. Anybody can say whatever they want. It's a weird thing, and when I look at like NIH studies and things like that, and you look at half the people, I'm in the hormone and wellness industry. You can go find a million studies that will say that exogenous hormones will cause cancer and cause heart disease and all these things. Yet we literally have studies that prove with blood work, because these are all anecdotal that they're citing, you know, they're correlating data that's saying, oh yeah, well, you know, obviously we, you know, for a prostate cancer patient, we have to remove testosterone to stop prostate cancer growth. That was their theory. So clearly testosterone causes prostate cancer. No, you can't correlate those two things. It's crazy. But they do the same thing with food studies. And I feel like this American Heart Association study, you know, 91% higher risk of cardiovascular death. Like, that's literal. I'm looking at it right here on my second screen. Mm-hmm. 8-hour time restricted eating linked to a 91% higher risk of cardiovascular death. American Heart Association epidemiology prevention. That's a very bold statement for the data they have behind that. But this just goes to show you. It goes to show you. Why don't I trust American Heart Association? Because of BS like this.
Yeah, and I think they also wrote, and I've got the study open and the links open in front of me as well, but it said factors that may also play a role in health outside of daily duration of eating and cause of death were not included in this analysis. They even said that.
Weird. Weird. So yeah, how many were obese?
Yeah.
How many of them were consuming highly processed foods and all of these other things that we know cause inflammation, heart disease, etc.? There's so much to it. There's no way they can correlate this. There's no way. This study is complete nonsense. And I mean, you know, we're talking about it now on the podcast. I'm pretty sure this is on my list of content to make for my social media stuff. So I'm pretty sure that I have to comment on this here when I'm filming this week and next week. So this is asinine, and it's not structured in fact, and it's not structured in reality. And people need to really look at these things. This is the problem, though. All they're looking at is the headline.
Yeah.
They're not reading it like me and you. They're looking at the headline. They're saying, oh, well, I mean, American Heart Association, they're trusted. They got to be right.
Yeah, it's interesting that this assumption is just built into these organizations. And I think a lot of people have trouble reconciling that there's a difference between the health practitioner or doctor in front of them that's a part of the system that wants to help versus the system that they are a part of. And so because their doctor is the face of that system, and they're like, no, I trust my doctor. He's a nice guy or she's a nice woman. The trust then like bleeds over into the Heart Association and into the pharmaceutical companies, because why would my doctor, who's a great human, be involved in such a scam, you know?
Sure. Well, the thing is that these doctors don't know better. And I hate to just call doctors out like that, because I'm not calling all of them out. I'm just saying some of them truly do not know better, because what are they taught? They're taught in school to follow the guidelines that are set by big medicine, by big pharma. And if people don't believe that big pharma and big medicine are tied, oh boy, do I have news for you, you know? And, you know, and then you have these organizations that we have proven that the American Heart Association has taken funding, you know, pretty nefariously, you know, for making statements.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and the same thing for the FDA. The FDA, oh yeah, this is safe and effective and all good. Guess what? It wasn't.
Well, the thing that kind of shocks me, I guess, is that these companies are allowed to operate in this space unregulated. And this is the situation across all social media on all topics. But the truth is no longer important. It's the reaction to information, irrelevant of that information, that is monetizable. And so people put out this clickbait content or these scary titles like, 8 hours of eating is, you know, deadly to your health, and people react, and it's got nothing to do with the truth. And you read the study, which they know, you know, probably 99% of people are not going to do.
Yeah.
And so now we've just started a whole new era of opinions about intermittent fasting that are literally based on awful data and awful science and clickbait. The truth is not a priority.
And that's the thing, and they're banking on that. Mm-hmm. They're banking on you not doing this. Now, why do you want to convince a populace to stay away from something as really ineffectual to the population? You know, why do they want you to do this? Why is it if I have 500 of my friends all doing intermittent fasting, why does that bother the American Heart Association? Why does that bother the FDA? Why does that bother Big Food? What are we doing? What are we doing to mess with them? We're costing them money.
Yep.
or costing them money. This is a business. Everything is linked to money. The almighty dollar, like I said before, if you think these big food companies, big pharma companies, if you think the American Heart Association cares truly about your health, you are so wildly mistaken. It's like, what was it? There's a quote, I think it was Ronald Reagan. So the scariest words in history, the scariest words from the government is, hello, I'm here from the government and I'm here to help you. So this is the same shit. You know what I mean? This is the same thought process. The people that just blindly trust these things and blindly trust these studies and don't do the research, they will automatically fight this idea that you and I are having, that all these viewers and listeners of How Not to Get Sick and Die podcast, they're looking at us and they're like, these people are crazy. They're all tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists. No, we're just looking at data and research. We're just not blindly trusting the powers that be. But that's what these people are banking on. They're banking on people to just automatically trust and automatically just, you know, yeah, no, they're right. They're right because they have some authority over me in whatever way, or they have some education that maybe I don't understand. And the reality is that people are lazy. They don't want to do research.
Well, even if people did their own, let's say, study in quotation marks of simply looking at the people that are talking like we are and then going and looking at the pharmaceutical reps and the doctors and just compare how healthy we all look.
Oh, yeah.
Just physically look at how our skin, our body weight, our stature. And from there, you should be able to think, oh, okay, there's something here that maybe the doctors aren't onto or the pharmaceutical reps aren't onto, that maybe these health and wellness nuts, you know, that are into all this biohacking and blah, 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 maybe they know something.
I mean, we're not saying anything out of the ordinary.
No.
Like, you know, we're a lot of stuff. What's funny is that a lot of the things that we preach, a lot of the things that we are looking at, they're quite traditional and they've been around for a very long time. You know, what's the new craze right now? There's new crazes about like ice baths and stuff like that. I have a cold plunge tub at my house. I have a sauna. There's a lot of data that says they're really good for you, right? These are things that have been around for centuries. This is not new stuff. You know, we're also looking at food the same way. Why do I want my bread to only have 4 to 5 ingredients? Because that's how it's supposed to be made. Mm-hmm. You know, why do we want to even look at the idea of intermittent fasting? So think of the idea of what intermittent fasting was. When we were hunting and gathering, or when we were working all day, we weren't eating 3 square meals, 4 or 5 square meals a day. There wasn't time for it. There also wasn't refrigerators until not too long ago, if we're talking about the human history, right? So guess what happens? You wake up in the morning. Yeah, sometimes you didn't eat. Sometimes there wasn't food. And then you had to go forage or gather or hunt or whatever. Our bodies are not meant to be eating more and more food all day long, more and more grains, processed, all this stuff. You know, so intermittent fasting is probably more in tune with how our bodies are naturally supposed to work than people even realize. Yeah. Just look at the history. Look at the study behind how did we even evolve to what we are now? You know? Yeah. Was it harder? And did people starve to death when we had to hunt and gather? Yeah, absolutely. Shit sucked. It was bad. It was hard. But, you know, we are still able to, you know, get that data and say, maybe there's something to that. You know, and maybe there's something to the fact that people are eating more and more food. The obesity epidemic is absolute. That's the, you want to talk about what a pandemic is? There's an obesity pandemic, not just in the US, but globally. It's happening everywhere. It's the worst, I think, in Canada and the United States. I think Canada and the United States is the absolute most repulsive populace when it comes to obesity. It's mind-boggling when you look at the percentages, and it's low. They're saying it's 45 to 55%. I'd venture to guess that it's probably closer to, you know, having the overweight and obese, I would say it's closer to probably 65, maybe even close to 70% of the population is at least overweight.
Yeah, which is majorly concerning. And there was something I saw recently. I'm not going to quote any numbers because I don't remember them clearly, but it was talking about how the American military, the US military, is the most overweight that it's ever been. And I think, you know, when you start getting to a point where a country's defenses are being weakened because of the health status of those people in that, like that's kind of terrifying, especially in the US, which is a big country that's big on conversations of defense and war and stuff like that. And
oh yeah,
it's like concerning that these people should be the fittest, healthiest people. And sure, there is plenty still among them. But the idea that, yeah, the level of sort of disarray in regards to health has gone from the average person that's low socioeconomic, can't afford much, and it's gone all the way through society, even to the wealthy, privileged, and now the people in defense, that's like majorly concerning.
Yeah, well, I mean, they dumbed down the qualifications. You know, they've dumbed down the physicality of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into the male-female dynamic, but it did play a major role.
Mm.
When they started basically dumbing down the qualifications for, because they had female military, mm-hmm. you know, female and women were always in the military for a very long time. Like, don't think like it's a new thing, but combat, in military combat, women in military combat is a very new thing. And I know people may not realize that. We're talking less than 30, 40 years.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah, so it has not been around for a very long time. Most of the time it was support roles or administrative roles, even medical roles. But actually in combat environment, the females has not been, you know, historically a very long time in that environment. And let's be honest, men and women are very, very different. Mm-hmm. And men are stronger, more resilient, and that's just how we're built. That's how God made us, the universe made us, genetics made us. I'm sorry if I just offended everybody about the gender dynamics between men and women. We're different, believe it or not. So they dumbed down a lot of these qualifications, you know, for physicality purposes, because the women just couldn't keep up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't run the certain distances. They can't ruck with the 60-pound pack. They can't climb and do the same amount of push-ups. They can't fight in the same way. So, well, we got to lower the bar. We got to lower the bar. We got to lower the bar. Now, what do you got?
Yeah.
You have a bar so low that you have a military that's getting obese. They're lazy. Mm-hmm. They're sedentary. They're constantly being babied. I would be scared shitless if we got into an actual physical war.
Yeah.
For the United States. Like, go look at, there's a hilarious comparison, actually, and I saw this on social media maybe a few months back. There's a hilarious comparison between the U.S. military advertisement and I think it was a Russian military advertisement. And it was, you couldn't have been more on opposite sides of the spectrum. It was hilarious. But, you know, to your point, why are our fighting young men and women, why are they not the most in shape? Why do you see police officers that are overweight and obese?
It's almost the stereotype, right? Like the police officer with the donut. Yeah.
It's a stereotype. And, you know, and I used to think it was hilarious because I was bodybuilding throughout my law enforcement career. You know, I was a police officer for 12 years, so I was always in very, very good shape. And I'd walk around, I mean, like, I had 21-inch arms, you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm so lean that you can, like, you know, see striations in my cheeks. You know what I mean? That's how lean I would get for competition. And I'm still working. And when you get to that point, you have to, like, refeed. You have to eat a lot of calories sometimes. So my coach would be like, hey, you know, I did my check-in stuff. And he'd be like, hey, go eat a couple donuts when you go in tonight. So I go to the store and people think I'm walking around eating donuts. They're like, ha ha, cop eating donuts. I'm like, yep, I have an 8-pack right now, just so you know.
Yeah, don't cross me. I will crush you.
They could clearly see me. I'm not the typical fat donut eating cop. But, you know, why are our fighting men and women and law enforcement and first responders, like, why is that a thing?
Mm.
That should not even be. I'll take it a step further. Honestly, like, if you are overweight or obese, I immediately think you are lazy. Like, I immediately do not want to trust you with business and certain things in my life. And I hate to be that blunt about it, but we all think the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say I was overweight. Let's say I was 300 pounds. If I have two people walk in right here and they are going for a job, six-figure job, let's say, and they have the exact same education, exact same qualifications, exact same references. They're twins, basically, in every single way. But one's in shape and one's overweight. Which one do I trust more? Even if I'm overweight. The one that's in shape.
Yeah.
You know they work harder.
They hold themselves to a better standard.
You know, it's a real thing. But when you say that out loud, and I'm sure when people listen to this, you know, this is going to piss people off.
Mm-hmm.
But if they really get away from that feeling of being angry about what I just said,
mm-hmm.
you know, they can really, you know, look introspectively and say, yeah, if I wanted to be in shape, I could. If I wanted to eat healthier, I could. If I wanted to go to the gym more, I could. And then one of two things is going to happen. They're either going to say, but I'm not, blow it off, go back to doing whatever they were doing. Or it's going to trigger something in their brain. They're going to say, why aren't I doing that? Let's go that path. Let's go do that. Let's go against what the rest of the world is doing, which is becoming fat and lazy.
So picture this, right? Unlocking your potential, conquering emotional eating, and gaining insights directly from a health and nutrition expert such as myself. That's what we do inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group, which is currently free to join. If you've ever felt trapped by food challenges, struggled with maintaining a healthy lifestyle, or yearned for a community that understands the reasons why you've yo-yo dieted for years, then there's a new chapter waiting to be written. And this is your chance to start writing it by joining us all on Facebook Lives, on engaging posts that push you out of your comfort zone and into growth, and Q&A sessions with me. All of this works as a platform to begin changing your emotional eating problems for good. Oh, and also, as a special gift, you'll receive my transformative How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook. And that's also for free. I get it. Skepticism might linger. You might think, Maddie, I've heard these ads and I'm not sure. Well, at least a quarter of the members inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group have been paying clients of my emotional eating program at some point over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're not sure, you can post in the group and ask to find out if I'm the real deal or not. It's totally up to you. To join us in the free Healthy Mums Collective and to end your emotional eating and feel good in your own skin and begin that journey, pop down to the show notes below, click the link and breeze through 3 simple entry questions. Join today and let's embark on a journey of growth and empowerment. The link is in the show notes below. See, I'm more inclined to lean in the direction of blaming organizations like the Heart Association and the FDA, sure, because these organizations are designed for our inherent trust as a populace, because not all of us can be an expert in every single area of society, right? And so we're meant to. And so I think the podcasts like this are people saying, hey, they're listening because they're like, things are not good in my body or in my health or in my life, whether it's finances or business or whatever it is. And I've trusted, sure, these organizations for so long, and clearly it's not working, you know?
Yeah. I would say if it was 1995, okay? I'm born in 85, so I'm a little bit older, you know, but 1995, there's no internet like we have today. Nobody's podcasting. You know, you're mostly reading the newspaper, and the people that do have internet, there's nothing on there, by the way. For anybody that was born after 1995, the internet didn't have anything on there during that time. No information. It was not the information superhighway it is now. I understand. I understand that at that time, it was very difficult to find your own information. Today in 2024, you have no excuse, you know? And I understand you're giving a benefit of the doubt, you know, saying like, hey, you know, yeah, we should have trust. But I think we all kind of just recently went through kind of a health situation globally, some sort of pandemic where things got a little bit weird. I don't know what that was about, but I largely ignored it. So we're going to be completely transparent. I followed zero regulations. I did zero. I did none of it. I didn't even close my business. I refused.
You and I both.
Yeah. So, you know, and a lot of us did. But if that didn't wake you up mentally and say, okay, I am the only person that is responsible for my health and wellness and well-being. If you went through that pandemic and those restrictions and those health guidelines, which have all basically come about and been proven to not have worked or to been even detrimental to a lot of people, if you went through that and you're not awake right now, understanding that it is all up to you and nobody cares about you, like, I hate to be that blunt about it. They don't care about you. They do not give a solitary blank beep. We're going to just beep it out about you, about your health, because that was a proven scenario. It was a proven scenario that it was all about money. We knew it was a money grab. Big Pharma made trillions, trillions, not billions, guys, trillions with a T. They made trillions off of what they did during that pandemic. So, you know, it is up to you and you have no excuse. There are podcasts like this. There are multiple podcasts. There, you know, we can go into the conversations that are happening on Joe Rogan's, on Andrew Huberman. Huberman is putting out great information right now.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to consume some of the crazy content that I have on my podcast, on Tomo Talks, you know, or any of my social media channels, but like, you can look at this American Heart Association article that I have right here on the screen, and Maddie has it on his screen right in front of him. You can look at this article and you can say, you'll just read the title and say, oh, well, it's bad for me. Or you can say, I have literally the entire world right here with this mouse, okay, on my computer, or right here on my phone and my hand, which is a computer, by the way. And you can literally research so much data and information in an hour that you will have enough to say, okay, let me make a more informed decision. This is not the people to trust. These big organizations, these big conglomerates, they're not necessarily trustworthy. The faster you get that through your head, the better off you're going to be in this life.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with everything you said. It took me to work in a cancer hospital before I really realized that. And that's kind of my backstory is that, yeah, working there and never hearing a discussion on cure or permanent recovery. And yeah, just I asked the silly question when I was much younger to my professor, which is, you know, what if they both eat McDonald's each day? Because we're comparing a couple of patients. And he laughed and sort of said, if it was that easy, then we would have figured this out years ago. And then since then, I've gone on to connect with and had on the podcast many cancer doctors and scientists and researchers that left the cancer industry just like myself. And there's heaps of stories of recovery and, you know, fixing things for and getting a lot more years out of life than was anticipated. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't there a guy who cured he cured his own cancer through, it was either chelation therapy or massive vitamin C IVs.
Yeah, there's heaps of the vitamin C IV stuff.
Yeah. And like it was a wild amount of vitamin C. Like it was like thousands percent more than should ever be done. But he literally killed his cancer.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, did the vitamin C do anything maybe negative? I'm sure it gave him some stomach issues. I'm sure, you know, because vitamin C will do that.
Yeah.
At massive amounts. I'm sure he had some side effects from taking 50,000% vitamin C dose, you know, per day or every week. I'm sure something happened like that. But what was the other side of that equation? Oh, I die of cancer. Yeah, we're going to take the risk.
Totally.
Why aren't cancer hospitals and why aren't these doctors doing that? Because they're not making money. You know how much cancer medications pay? You know how much cancer medications cost through health insurance? Oh, man. I'm telling you. Like, really, Maddie, like if we got your podcast, How Not to Get Sick and Die, if we got this podcast into, I would say 20% of the world audience watching podcasts, and they just took it and actually understood it and didn't fight the concept that we were just talking about where it's all about money and it's not about your health and they don't care about you, do you have any idea how disruptive that would be?
Oh, it'd be incredible. Yeah.
It'd be insanity. And I hope it does get there. I hope something like that does happen. With this podcast, with others, I hope this conversation happens. Because again, if that pandemic that happened, if that didn't wake you up, you know, or if you didn't have an experience like Maddie or you didn't have an experience like me, if you're not awake yet, man, just for a second, think logically of what they're doing.
I'm curious in sort of this conversation about sort of intermittent fasting, but further to that, diets and trends.
Sure.
And coupled with the whole money conversation and, you know, that financial incentive, what do you think kicks off diet trends? Like when the latest fad is a thing, you know, it was like vegan for a while and now it's carnivore and then it was intermittent fasting and each diet is the holy grail for about 3 or 4 years and then yeah. It switches to something else.
You know, it's a lot of it has to do with, especially recently, I would say in the last 5 to 10 years. A lot of it had to do with social media, YouTube, things like that. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with like styles, you know? Why is everybody in the gym wearing Crocs? I'm actually asking because I saw that recently. Every single kid, like 16 to 25, why are you all wearing Crocs in the gym? First of all, you look stupid. Second of all, there's zero function there. Third of all, dangerous. like trends, right? So we're going to talk about like social trends. In diets, they start with social trends. You know, think about when the vegan craze started coming up. You know, what are they talking about? And I mean, again, we can tinfoil hat this. Who wants veganism to happen? Oddly enough, a lot of big food companies, a lot of big business, a lot of government, a lot of this stuff, right? Why do they not want us getting steak? Why are they trying to make fake meats?
Yeah.
Why do they want us to eat bugs? It's a real thing, by the way.
Interestingly, the American Heart Association is one of those organizations that pushing a more plant-based diet.
Yeah. And I'll tell you right now that most plant-based items in the grocery stores are so wildly toxic.
Yeah.
That I can't even begin to tell you. Now, if you want to eat vegan, raw vegan, that's fine. You know, you're not going to have all the toxic seed oils and all sort of stuff. Vegetarian, I'm with. I have several Indian friends that are vegetarian.
Mm.
Great diet, because you can eat eggs still. You can have protein. Eggs are some of the best protein sources on the planet.
Yeah.
So, great. Pescatarian, same thing. Eat all the fish you want. All good. If you don't want to eat meat, you don't want to eat beef, chicken, you know, turkey, lamb, that's fine. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a big problem with the plant-based movement. We are not cows. We do not have three-chamber stomachs. We do not process foods the same way. I would, and man, if you want me to really push against it, half of the foods that they want you to eat from the vegan that they say are so healthy are technically poisonous for humans.
Yeah.
Like the amount of nightshade family leafy greens that we eat, kale, spinach, there's actual problems that are happening in your gut.
Yeah. Or the anti-nutrients.
Yeah. Your body's having a problem processing and digesting that. Like, we're much closer probably to a keto diet naturally, mm-hmm. I would say most humans, than people realize, you know? What do we still process some grains and things like that? Sure, but mostly ancient grains.
Mm.
Not highly processed brominated wheat, which is what everybody's eating.
Yeah.
You know, why is there a gluten problem in the West specifically? Is celiac and gluten a big thing in Australia?
Yeah, it's a massive thing.
Oh, so you guys
have
the same problem.
Yep.
Have you been to Europe recently?
Yeah, last year I was there. But yeah, a lot of people have a much better experience with the wheat and the pasta and bread in France and Italy and that type of thing.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, I had Tom O'Brien on an episode recently. He's a doctor he's a lecturer and a faculty head at the Functional Medicine Institute.
Okay.
And he was saying that, which I brought this point of conversation up with him, but he recently said that basically the difference is that people in Europe are still having the same experience, but not to the same intensity. So it's not as obvious. So he said he reckons the immune system is still being triggered, just not to the same degree.
He's probably correct. I would say that they're not doing something completely different, but it is also how they process their food and how they cook their food.
For sure.
So, I mean, we, my family, my mother, my significant other, we make our own bread,
mm-hmm.
you know? So we're getting very high quality, non-brominated flour. We're using very clean water, salt, and yeast. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Four ingredient bread is where it should be, right? And no, it's not hard to make for anybody to understand, like actually ask, like, oh yeah, it's so hard to make bread. It's not. It's so freaking easy. It's dumb. But what they do in Italy and France and all this stuff, they let their bread sit for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is the yeast will actually eat a lot of the gluten. It'll actually lessen it, and it'll lessen the extent of it. So, you know, are you still having a gluten intake when you're eating certain bread? Yeah, but it's minuscule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problem with everything in the West and Western culture, Australia's included, you know, what do they want? Fast.
Yeah.
Guess how long that dough probably sits before it's baked. 20 minutes. It should be sitting for 4 hours minimum.
Yeah.
I let our bread sit, our dough sit for 12 hours out on the counter, covered with a towel. Old school, man. Old school is good. Old school is good. People are so adverse. Like, oh no, we have modern technology. Okay. I think modern technology hit a certain peak. And yes, we have access to food and health and medicine. And then it started to take a downturn because everybody's more overweight, sick, and having a lot of problems mentally and physically. So let's turn the clock back a little bit. You know, when do we hit our height? I don't know. But yeah, the dietary crazes, all these things, it is very, very individual. And I want everybody to understand how individual it is. Do not look at one study. Do not look at one diet fad. Try it. I've tried it. I've tried carnivore. I eat a lot of meat. I eat a lot of steak. I tried carnivore. I love meat. But carnivore, I maybe made it 10 days. I felt horrible.
Interesting.
Just didn't like it, you know? I was a little bit better with the keto diet, just not because straight carnivore is it's very direct. You're literally eating meat all day, all night, you know, that's all there is. You know, and I've tried vegan diets and I've tried balanced diets and I've done all kinds of diets. Why? Because I want to know what works best for me.
Yeah.
You know, and what works best for me is a balanced diet. What works best for most people is a balanced diet. You are going to be a little bit heavier on lean proteins. You're going to be, you know, less heavy on certain grains and certain carbohydrates. And yeah, sprinkle in some vegetables. That's it. It's a really simple equation. Like, everybody knows what they should be doing.
Yeah.
That's my most hilarious point that I make, man. It's like every single person that's going to watch this or consume this information or consumes any information like this, nothing we are saying is groundbreaking.
No.
Because in the back of these people's minds, they know what to do. They know not to eat certain foods. They know they have to exercise. They know they have to live this lifestyle, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, it's on that why. I think sort of psychologically speaking, like a lot of the people that have these challenges are perfectionists. And yeah. So that perfectionist tendency can lead to, if I don't get it perfect, then I'm confused and lost. If I don't have structure and I don't know exactly what to be eating at every single step, then I'm just going to go to, you know, knowing what I shouldn't do because I know what I shouldn't do very clearly. And so it's like this sense of I'm in control. I know what I'm doing. It's like wine, pizza, chocolate. I am nailing being unhealthy. I'm perfectly nailing being unhealthy.
Do you know what I think? Do you know, I'm going to take it a step further than what you just said.
Yeah.
And this is, again, a little bit controversial. Do you want to know what I honestly think most people are?
What?
Very, very arrogant. I think most people are not misinformed. Most people have all the information. Most people know exactly what they have to do. Most people are so arrogant that they can't actually look at themselves in the mirror and say, okay, I need to do that. They almost don't want to call themselves out. Mm. They almost don't want to admit that they are doing wrong. So they will convince themselves that, no, it's okay that I do this. It's okay that I'm a couple pounds overweight. They justify because they are wildly arrogant.
Interesting.
That's what I think it's a hard line. It's a hard line to say. And it would piss some people off when you think about it. But, you know, think of how many times we justify these things. Like, no, it's okay. It's okay that I'm, you know, 20 pounds overweight. At least I'm not 50. At least I'm not as fat as that guy.
Yeah.
You know? And then they won't actually bring themselves to look in the mirror and be like, yeah, you know, I'm fat. I look like shit. I feel like shit. I don't work well. My brain isn't functioning. My relationship is affected by this. I can't play with my kids long. I can't run with them. Oh, my kid is overweight or obese. Like, when you say that, you have to take extreme accountability.
Yeah.
And most people are so accountability adverse. So I'd say the biggest problem with all of this health stuff, all this stuff, because you know what you need to do, you need to stop being arrogant and you need to admit that there's a problem. Because that's going to save your life.
Totally. And I would definitely agree to that to some degree. And because a lot of people don't want to break up with the lifestyle that they've got. You know, they go out for dinner a lot, or they connect with their partner over wine every night, or whatever the thing is. And so they're fearful that if they break up with that lifestyle, that's like, well, where will I connect with my partner? Or when will I see my friends? Does this mean I'm removed from society completely?
Yeah.
And so there's that idea of like, well, I can't change these things and I might as well accept them. But even that is actually inspiring to me. People that say, I'm not going to change, but I accept the reality.
Yeah.
I think that's more impressive than like that sort of partial denial of reality.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the acceptance of it and the understanding of it, it's powerful as well, you know? Do I think it's the right thing to do? No, I don't, personally. And again, I'm hardline, you know? Do I think it's okay to be obese? I don't. Not only are you affecting yourself, you're affecting everybody and everything around you. The health system and the insurance system and the health industries is a problem because you are obese. And more people become obese, the more there's disease, the more insurance rates go up, the more hospitals are overwhelmed, the more medications go up. There is a trickle effect that nobody actually puts together.
Yeah.
And the way that my brain works, 5 to 15 moves ahead, that's what I'm looking at. So, you know, when someone's like, well, I'm okay with this lifestyle, I accept this. I'll say, well, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't accept it. I challenge you to be better. I don't accept that you're going to get a free seat on the airplane and kick somebody off the plane because you're too fat to fit in one seat. I'm not with it, Maddie. And people do not like that about me, and I get it, you know, but I really hope this pushes people to look at their dietary idea and challenge everything that they see in the news from these big organizations and corporations and try things, experiment. Don't just jump on fad after fad. But understand that, you know, health is individual. There is no possible way that me and you, Maddie, would ever be able to have the same dietary and same physical and same. It wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. Even if we are damn near identical, it wouldn't happen. There's still a little bit of variation.
Yeah, totally. And I think, yeah, that commitment long term is the big thing because, yeah, like you just said, bouncing between fads, it's just not going to be a consistent commitment to something that your body's going to adjust to, get used to. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think people need to commit. And interesting to what you said before too, is that I have multiple layers of thought. I think my default is to be more empathetic and compassionate. But if I get into full, what is my opinion about life? Yeah, I'm also a part of this society that has to pay tax and has to pay for health. And on the very few occasions that I need it, it's super expensive because everybody else is not holding themselves accountable, you know?
Yeah.
And that will affect my children and, you know, and even the decision to have children. Like, that's literally a factor in my decision. It's like, a lot of the health, you know, health and wellness nuts that are down these rabbit holes are like, is it worth bringing children into a world that's so fat, sick, and dying, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you ever ask me that question, yes. Because if you're asking that question and you're on the one side of the field, mm-hmm. where you're understanding what's happening, yes, you need to bring children into this world because we need children like you.
Stop it.
That's my answer. We need children like you.
Yeah, no. That's my conclusion.
Because
as well.
All the fat, sick, and dying people are having a lot of children.
Yeah, true. Totally.
We need more people. We need more people like us talking about these things, understanding. And we need children growing up in an environment that is taught like us. Because your and my children are not going to be like that.
Well, hopefully.
Because we're not going to allow it. We're going to teach them. Well, no, we're going to teach them, you know?
What if we traumatize our kids? Because all parents do. And then they rebel against me. And then they go and just eat McDonald's every day.
I mean, you know, there's a risk that could happen. But I think the risk to reward there is that the likelihood is that children emulate their parents if they're good parents.
Yeah, totally. So where can everybody find you on the internet? Where are we sending people to hang out with Tomo?
Yeah, so you can follow me on any social media platform. It's at Tomo_Marjanovic. So TOMO_MARJANOVIC. My website is TomoMarjanovic.com. You can find information about my medical clinics, AspireRejuvenation.com. I own a supplement line that we just launched called Cement Factory Nutrition. Highest end supplements that you can possibly get. And trust me, they cost us a fortune. You know, so, you know, find CementFactory.com on there. And follow my podcast, Tomo Talks, on YouTube. And I think we're on Rumble now, too, because I think we might have gotten a little controversial on some items. So we're going to push some things to Rumble as well. But yeah, anybody wants to have conversations, I'm very open. New thing, Maddie, I need to get you on this as well.
Yeah.
There's an app called Manect.
Manect.
It's by my friend Patrick Bet David. And Manect is a platform that basically you can talk to experts from all over the place.
Right.
So I'm on this app called Manect, and you download the app. MINNECT. And I'm on Manect, and you can search my name on there, Tomo Marjanovic. Mm-hmm. And you can have conversations with me. It can be text message conversations, videos. It can be a live chat situation. And you're basically paying by the minute or 15 minutes or an hour. It's amazing.
Great.
And I've talked to some crazy people on there. I'm going to send you the link.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. And I'll put all of those links in the show notes below and including that app. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah, nice. And for us to round out this conversation, what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about?
Oof.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I think the last time we met up, we were talking about lab work and getting your lab tests done and making sure that you understand your health markers. I guess I'm going to probably reiterate a point that I already said a couple times. You have every bit of information in front of you. You have access to literally such a large amount of information that you can learn or do anything, anything. So whatever you are contemplating, questioning, you know, wanting to verify, please verify everything. Please spend 5 minutes doing it because these things matter for your life. If the American Heart Association tells you that intermittent fasting is bad and you read that article and you're like, well, I can't intermittent fast, but all my friends are doing it. Why are they doing it? Maybe they researched something. Maybe they went on, you know, Google or DuckDuckGo or Yahoo or whatever, and they found information that is to the antithesis of this. Maybe they understand, like Maddie and I, that the American Heart Association is funded by corporations. My biggest piece of advice, health advice, do your research. Experiment with your health.
Yeah, good advice. Thanks, man. I appreciate you being here and hope to have you back soon.
Appreciate it, Maddie. Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.